Take your career to the next level. The University of South Florida, St. Petersburg is offering a master's degree in digital journalism and design. Do the entire program from home and complete it in as little as 1 year. The cost is reasonable. The experience is invaluable. For more information, call 727-873-4544.
Discover your career in oceanography at the University of South Florida's College of Marine Science, where groundbreaking research meets hands-on learning. Located in St. Petersburg, Florida, we offer cutting-edge research opportunities with world-renowned faculty. Students at the USF College of Marine Science gain experience across the disciplines of oceanography to steer them on a course for greatness. Visit us at usf.edu/marine-science to begin your ocean journey.
From the College of Marine Science at the University of South Florida, this is the Rising Tides podcast. Join us as we explore how researchers are using cutting-edge technology to unravel secrets of the ocean. Here is your host from the university's Department of Journalism and Digital Communication, Professor Elliot Weiser.
Hi, everyone, and welcome. I am really excited about this episode because we're going to talk about some really cool technology. The subject of our admiration has been described as a seagoing pickup truck that is helping scientists better understand oceans. Our topic on this episode is gliders. Yes, they look like an airborne glider, but these go underwater. To open our eyes to this exciting technology is Chad Lemke, the research faculty member and project engineer at the USF College of Marine Science. Chad, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So you've been involved in some really exciting research with gliders. So give us a quick overview of what they do and why they're so important.
Yeah. Okay. Gliders are robots that go in the water. And, you know, there's a lot of different types of robots, but these are specifically designed to go from the surface to the bottom or to the maximum depth that they can go to get the information about what's going on in the water column. They were originally designed and pushed for by the Navy back in the 90s to get coastal water column variables, you know, in the coastal region, specifically for density and temperature and salinity for their models. Because when you're doing sonar in the water, you want to know where something is and you're pinging, and sound bends because of density in the water. And therefore, they needed cheap, fast, reliable temperature and salinity information to fit into their models to better predict things. So these came along as a pickup truck to be able to collect that kind of information as quickly and reliably as possible. And once that truck works, you throw all different kinds of things on it to do other types of science.
And we're going to talk about different things you're going to throw on it in a minute. So they're designed to stay at sea for months without a crew. So what makes that possible? How does that happen?
Well, batteries, but
big battery.
There are batteries. Yeah, there's pretty big batteries. And, most of the weight is batteries, and then you have electronics, and then you have what's called a buoyancy pump. You know, they don't come with propellers. They don't have thrusters. They just float and sink. And then in addition to floating and sinking, they have wings and they move things around internal so that they tilt. And then as they're tilting and sinking, they use the wings to propel them forward. And then with an altimeter, they see the bottom and they turn and they come back up. And then they see the surface and they turn again and they go up and down over and over again, propelling themselves forward at pretty slow speeds, roughly half a knot or less, and progress along. And then every so often they come up to the surface and talk to us and get information from us or send us information, and we send it information. But in general, it's a very efficient way to move. It doesn't move real fast, and all the sensors that we carry on board are real power efficient, but that way we can get out for weeks to months at a time.
Really? For months sometimes?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. If you put, especially, battery technology is evolving, and some of the newer lithium battery packs, they can stay out for 3 to 6 months at a time. There are newer versions that are larger that they're anticipating hopefully being able to stay out for a year at a time.
So How do you determine the route? And can you change the path if you need to midstream?
Yeah, so they do navigation through waypoint navigation. It's just dead reckoning. Once they're underwater, they really don't have any idea where they are. So they use a lot of predictive capabilities through a compass and through pitch and roll sensors. And they basically set a waypoint in a direction and progress in that direction in that way. As an operator, we need to keep an eye on the physical characteristics of the ocean at the time. You know, how fast is the water moving? Where is it moving? For instance, sometimes we operate in and out of the loop current or the Gulf Stream, which both of those move at 2 to 5 times as fast as a glider can. And so we have no way to really control it other than just trying to get in and out of currents like that. And so knowing the operational environment is really important. The other thing that can hurt us is the buoyancy. Since I mentioned these things float and sink, we have to understand the density of the water to make sure that we can actually do that. Occasionally, we'll get caught underneath a bunch of fresh water and we get stuck and we're not able to get all the way to the surface. Or sometimes if you get super dense water, we have a hard time punching through it down below and getting down all the way to the bottom.
So these work mainly in salt water?
They can work in fresh water, but you would not take one that is ballasted for salt water and put it in fresh water. They can go back and forth, but that's part of the process of preparation is looking out at in the ocean at some of the other observing technologies such as buoys or models and understanding what the density structure is when we're getting ready to put it out there and making sure we line it up and weigh it properly. So we put it in a tank and weigh it in the tank and adjust the buoyancy of it based on that by adding or subtracting a little bit of weight.
So what kind of information are you getting from the gliders?
Like I mentioned, at first they were designed for temperature and salinity, which as an engineer, when I got here, I didn't fully understand that water out offshore isn't just kind of a puddle. There's actually layers of the ocean. Some go one direction, go another direction. There's things called upwelling and downwelling that determine where the water moves. So understanding that kind of drives all the physical processes of where the water wants to go, how nutrients might get moved, where fish might go. But like I said, once you have that pickup truck working, you throw all kinds of things on it. So now we monitor things like red tide. We listen for fish. We listen for whales. We look for nitrogen. We do a lot of different things.
Can it help you track hurricanes?
We cannot track the hurricanes, but what we've been doing now for the last 5 years or so is working with NOAA and the hurricane prediction groups. And what's important to the hurricane prediction is, especially in terms of intensity, is how much heat there is in the water. You consider how hot the water is and how deep that hot water is as fuel. As a hurricane passes over a region, it sucks a lot of that heat out. In layman's terms, that's essentially what happens. And the more heat there is, generally, the stronger the hurricane might get. And so by understanding the heat content within the water prior to a hurricane going through an area, you have a much better chance at determining whether that's going to be a hurricane strength 1 or a hurricane 5 when it comes through. And that's important for, you know, whether or not me or my dad evacuate, you know, as opposed to sitting there and waiting for it.
You mentioned marine life. Let's talk about the glider and marine life. You're able to track marine life where they're going?
Yeah, we use 3 different acoustic technologies on the gliders to listen or monitor fish and other marine life, including plankton and whales. The first thing that we ever did when we first started back in 2009 was listening for fish. There are fish that make sounds, and of course, marine mammals make sounds. And so when we pass through an area, we can immediately get a count if that fish is making sounds. that's more, we started doing red grouper. You can hear them quite a bit, and you could do get maps of where the red grouper reside. More recently, we're working with a lot of other glider groups that are monitoring whales. In the Gulf of Mexico, it's become of particular interest with the Rhesus whale that has become recently focused because there's so few of them. But we can hear them on the glider. We can track their sounds, and so we know their presence or absence in certain areas and can correlate that to anthropogenic sounds, you know, sounds from the oil industry or vessels or things of that nature. The second way we track them is through tags. There's acoustic tags that people put on fish or marine mammals, and we can hear those if we put a receiver on the glider. And again, that's presence or absence. We can hear whether that fish is still in the area. And then the newest thing that we've been doing is what's called water column echo sounders, which is very, very similar to what any boat has as a depth finder, you know, and fish finder, except that there's scientific versions that you can actually calibrate so that when you see those red dots of what you think is fish in your fish finder, we can tell that's actually a fish this big or this small. You can actually calibrate how big or small that mass is by using scientific standards.
So let's talk about data collection, Chad. So do you have to wait till the glider comes back to you, or is it communicating while it's out in the ocean? How does that work?
Yeah, so as a user, you control how often it comes to the surface. And we typically have it come up every 4 hours or so. And when it comes up to the surface, it makes a connection to our server. It downloads decimated data, so we get a small portion of the data that it stores. And we process that, and we share it with NOAA and the Navy. We share it with NOAA and the Navy and other groups, other research groups that we work with, real time. And it goes up on the web and, you know, is available for use. It gets pumped into models and whatnot. Then when we get the glider back, we get the full resolution data and download it. And again, share it at the full resolution.
So obviously ocean conditions can be very unpredictable. So how do these gliders handle extreme weather conditions, marine life, even encounters with people?
Yeah, the gliders are wonderful tools at generally avoiding significant damages because they spend the vast majority of their time under the surface. And so you really don't see them when they're out there. They're out there doing their thing and you just don't see them. When they come to the surface to communicate, they're usually on the surface for 10 minutes or so out of every 4 hours. So it's pretty minimal. So our interaction with people and boat strikes is pretty minimal. We've had over about 150 deployments. We've had three that had vessels pick them up and bring them back. Fortunately, none of them damaged the gliders in that situation. What happens a little bit more often is we do get hit by sharks a fair bit. They rip off components from the glider, which then usually render it either partially functional or completely dysfunctional. We've had a couple where the sharks got them pretty good. The last things that we get is it's more of a nuisance is suckerfish or remoras attach to them, at least down here in the Gulf and along the Southeast Atlantic. We get them, and remoras don't have swim bladders, so they're heavy. And since this is a buoyancy regulated platform, the gliders end up sinking and sitting on the bottom for days at a time or until they can get to the surface. And they have lots of fail safes to try to get to the surface. But the last one is to eject a weight. They drop a 1 pound weight. And once they do that, they can no longer sink. So we have to go out and pick them up, whether that's on a weekday or Easter Sunday, you have to go pick it up.
So obviously, USF College of Marine Science, not the only people using gliders, correct? Other people are using gliders.
Yeah, very true.
So just wild guess. At any given time, are there like thousands of gliders in the ocean traveling around?
No. I would put it more, there's tens of gliders at all times. In fact, I get a list every day of all the American, U.S. institution gliders that are in the water that NOAA is tracking. And it's usually typically somewhere between 10 and 50. And then there's a number of them also. The Europeans are very active, and Japanese and Australians are very active.
Interesting. Let's talk cost and efficiency. Compare gliders to other research vessels.
So as far as operating costs, you're looking, you know, we can average our costs at roughly about between $500 and $1,000 a day. You know, even a charter boat to go out that we use to go, actually, we usually use fishing charter boats to do deployments and recoveries, you know, they cost more than that. So the operational costs are quite minimal, and the benefit of being able to stay out in any weather is advantageous. Now, a vessel, a boat, and people on it is obviously more capable than a robot that just goes from the surface to the bottom. So you have to align it with your goals and what you're trying to do with science. You know, gliders are wonderful for sustained long-term observations in coastal waters. You know, there's other tools for looking at other things. And, you know, the research vessels are kind of the cream of the crop in a lot of ways, because they can really allow researchers on board to do a lot, whereas a robot can do things, you know, all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Last question. What's next for gliders? What's in the future as far as innovations for gliders?
The real advantage of these things is that they've gotten to the point where they're reliable and routine. You know, they stay out when you put them out. They very seldom fail. And, but I think as that continues and people really understand how to use the information, you're going to continue to see more and more science done with them. I think especially on the biological side, you know, these were developed to understand the physics, but I think they are ideally tuned for really understanding the biology, which is far more complex than I fully understand, but it's really a great tool for doing it.
Well, you lived up to the billing at the beginning of this episode. This was some cool technology, cool topic. So Chad Lemke, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Next on the Rising Tides podcast, we'll take a closer look at two destructive forces involving our oceans, hurricanes and red tide, and what the latest research is telling us about these phenomenons. Please tell your friends and family about our podcast. A new episode drops every Wednesday, and we would appreciate an excellent rating and review on Apple or Spotify. Until next time, I'm Professor Elliot Weiser.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Tides podcast, produced by the Department of Journalism and Digital Communication in cooperation with the College of Marine Science at the University of South Florida. Executive producers are Elliot Weiser and Dylan Furness. Producers are Jensen Horvath and Rhiannon McIsaac. Director is Christopher Campbell. And a special thank you to Dr. Mark Walters and to all of our guests from the College of Marine Science who shared their research with us.